Hi, this is Neil Funk, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello, this is Nick Friedel, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye. Hi, this is Chuck Swirsky, and you're listening to Frank on the Chicago Bullseye.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. We have a real treat for you today. Darnell Mayberry is on the line, the illustrious, the legendary beat writer for The Athletic who covers the beloved Bull. Darnell, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Fred. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's an honor to have you on the airwaves. You are a rock star in Chicago, especially. You've risen another level with your excellent article on the 2011 Bulls. I'm not going to talk about that too much because I hate to admit it, but our good friend Mark, mutual friend Mark Kay from Australia on Bulls HQ, did an excellent job. He did an excellent job in that interview, and I've listened to it at least four or five times and really enjoyed that. So anyone who wants to listen to that, check it out. I highly recommend it. One really quick question on it, though, I did have. In doing that article, was there any follow-up from anybody around the team in the interim since you did that article and today?
Yeah, people around the team really enjoyed it. I mean, I've had people from the support staff to front office personnel telling me that, you know, they did take a look at it and they thought it was they thought it was well done. They really enjoyed. I'm not sure how many people got through all of it, but yeah. I do know that some people, because they lived it, you know. So, I do know that people did enjoy it from the team standpoint.
Oh, it's a must read if you haven't read it yet. Anyone listening to the show probably has, but it is fantastic, and you did just a great job on it. And I can't tell you how much it made my holiday break. So that along with the holiday trade. Those two things really made my break, I will admit. Let's get into, though, the team at hand, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending. I mean, we could reminisce, but I do have a ton of questions for you about the beloved Bull as currently constituted. So you saw, you're kind of uniquely positioned because you saw a talented Oklahoma City team grow and develop. What similarities, if any, do you see between the Oklahoma City Thunder under Durant and Westbrook in the 2018-19 Chicago Bulls?
The biggest similarity is just the young talent, the amount of young talent. You got Markkanen, LaVine, Dunn, Wendell. It's just a lot of young talent here. I don't think this talent in Chicago is anywhere near the level of talent that the Thunder had back then. But I do see some similarities. Chris Dunn, when he first arrived here, he kind of reminded me of a young Russell Westbrook. That's an idiotic comparison these days, but he did show he had flashes that reminded me of a young Russ. And even his flaws are similar to Russ even to this day. You know, decision making and turnovers. Those are the two things that everyone knows Chris Dunn needs to work on. And those are the two things Russell Westbrook had needed to work on from the start and still needs to improve today. So Dunn is nowhere near the athlete that Russell Westbrook is, and I don't think he has anywhere near the confidence that Russell Westbrook has. So I think those are the two big things that separate the two. And obviously, as wonderful as a scorer as Zach LaVine is, and I know people have their concerns about him as a player and even as a scorer, but he's obviously nowhere near the level of Kevin Durant as a scorer. But I do see a lot of talent on this team, and that is the biggest similarity.
If out of those, the young talent, do you think any of these guys have top 10 NBA potential? And if so, which player is it?
Oh, man, that's a tough one because I don't want to limit a guy like Lauri Markkanen, or even Zach LaVine at this point. Zach is still a very, very young guy. And he, when he's 28, 29, who knows what he can be, given, assuming health. He could be there. I don't want to limit him or put a ceiling on him, because I do think that the one thing that people don't really understand about Zach, I don't think, is that he's really driven. He's really determined. He wants to be as good of a player as he can be. He wants to be the best player in the league someday, and he goes out there and he puts in the work to do it. So, you know, I think it's unfair for people to label him selfish and, you know, trying to put ceilings on him and cap his growth and development, because they don't really understand how hard he works. But Laurie, you know, I know we all love him. I just think he disappears a lot. And, you know, when you have great players, and if you're talking about a potential top 10 player, I don't think a potential top 10 player goes MIA as much as we've seen Laurie do. And I've credited him for being a selfless type of player. He doesn't go out there and just selfishly jack shots. I like that about him. I think that's one of the best aspects to his game. But at the same time, I mean, you can't go out there on certain nights and have 10 points like he did at Portland, or six shot attempts like he did at one point. I forget what game that was this year, but six shot attempts. That just happened too much to him in his first season and a half. And I'm not sure what that is. I know a lot of it is due to his selflessness. But at some point, he's got to be able to really take control and command the ball and dominate games consistently if we're ever going to look at him as a potential top 10 player.
I agree. He needs a little bit more of what Blakeney has, whatever that is.
Yeah, or Bobby Portis, yeah.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. There's got to be some responsibility on him for getting it six shots in the game. A lot of it is on the coach, but a lot of that is on him. Back to the Oklahoma City, were you there when Harden was there?
Yeah, so I covered them the first eight, I think it was their first 7 or 8 years. I think I covered them their first 8 seasons. So from 2008 until 2016, the end of the 2015-16 season. So I covered Harden's first 3 years before they made that trade.
So I never had – I watched a lot of Oklahoma City at that time. And that's the analogy I try to make with today's Bulls, is I realize they're probably not going to max out anywhere near Durant or Westbrook, but – there is so much delta between guys at this stage of their careers and Markkanen and Levine and Dunn and where they'll be in 3 or 4 years. And Harden's a guy I think about, because I didn't see him getting remotely near the level that he is today, you know, averaging nearly 40 in the last couple of weeks, just insane MVP material here. Did you see that too? Or do you feel when you go back and you recollect on Harden watching him as a young player, did you expect that this guy could remotely approach where he is today?
No, and I do think the rules have really, really helped James. You know, he just was fortunate to be able to come up in the right era. That's not a slight against James in any way. I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but I do think the rules have helped a lot of guys. And James is one who benefits the most. And just the way the offense, you know, the new wave of NBA offenses has really helped James as well. And playing for Mike D'Antoni, you know, that's helped. So he's benefited from a lot of really good situations for him. But at the same time, yes, like you could see that the guy was not this level, but you could see that he had tremendous talent. And I remember back then I was one of the only ones, you know, not the only, but one of the only ones saying, hey, this guy needs to start. I mean, I don't care what you guys are trying to do, you know, with Thompson Cephalosha as the starting two guard, this guy is a game changer. And we saw that a handful of times in the regular season and then even in the playoffs. I remember 2011 Western Conference Finals. You know, he was just dominating that Dallas team that went on to win the NBA championship. They all obviously lost the series, but Harden had some really nice games closing it out, being the best player on the floor with teams that included Dirk Nowitzki and Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook. You know, they had Hall of Famers on the court, and James Harden in his second or third year was the best player on the floor at times. So you could see the potential, but obviously, you know, what he's doing now, you didn't think he was going to be an MVP and potentially a back-to-back MVP. So, you know, credit to him for putting in the work and really realizing what he had to do to become a player. And to get back to the Bulls, I think that's what these guys need to do. I think Zach has it. You know, I think, you know, Laurie, Wendell, Chris, those guys are going to have to be able to really put in the hard work and know how to become dominant players in this league, because you know, right now they're just kind of trying to find themselves, and they've got to figure out how to really take that next jump.
Who was the leader of those early years in Oklahoma City? Was it apparent to you who that player was, number one? And number two, who's the leader in this team for the Chicago Bulls in the locker room?
Back then, we all thought it was Kevin Durant. You know, and he led more by example. You know, he wasn't a real vocal guy. He was kind of like Larry Markkinen. He was quiet. He joked around, got along with everyone, but just kind of stayed to himself a little bit, but went out there and dominated games and was looked at and viewed as the face of the franchise. But, you know, I think the emotional leader was Russell Westbrook, and the guy who went out there and gave everyone that extra level of confidence was Russell Westbrook, because they knew that no matter what, he was going to bring it. He was going to drive them crazy with some of his decision making, but he was also going to go out there and play as hard as he possibly could and give it his all and lead those guys no matter what, and always keep attacking. So they had a very, very interesting duo from that standpoint. One guy who was going out there and just killing them, you know, softly, wasn't a rah-rah guy, Kevin Durant, and then another guy who was more in your face and bringing that emotional element that teams need. So with this team, you know, I think LaVine has it. I think Laurie has the potential to have it. And then defensively, you know, Chris Dunn leads these guys. Those are the three guys. And then Wendell, I just like to see Wendell assert himself more. He's kind of tried to do that a little bit in the first half of the season with some of his comments and trying to take on more of a leadership role. I'd like to see him do it on the court a little bit more. And I know that's hard for a 19-year-old rookie, but at some point, especially, you know, with a coach who's come in and stymied him a little bit, but I'd like to see him be able to take more charge on the court as the season goes on.
What do you mean by stymied? Jim Boylan stymied Wendell Carter. Is it just the minute issue which I thought was ridiculous the other day, where, you know, he just benched a player that really needs to be playing for because he played poorly? Well, that's going to happen. Why wasn't Holiday benched for the last 3 weeks? You know, so, I mean, give me a break. Do you feel Boylan has hurt his progress?
A little, I think a little bit. You know, I'm not going to put all of that on Boylan. Some of that is due to rookie just ups and downs. That's the ebb and flow of rookies in this league. But the game at Portland, you know, that was his first three-pointer made since November 7th. So, you know, he's not taking as many.
Yeah.
Obviously not making as many. So that's down under Boylan. His shot attempts just aren't the same. You know, they're not going to him enough in the post. They're not looking for him enough out of the screen and roll. So there's a lot of different things, a lot of different aspects of the game that I think they could be using Wendell more appropriately and more efficiently, but he's just kind of going out there and being a glue guy and a dirty worker, and he's so much more than that. That's what I mean. I'm not saying that he's hurt him or set him back, but I do think that he is not helping advance him, if that makes sense.
I agree 100%. I think Wendell Carter Jr. has elite shooting potential. I think the Bulls could have a 4 and a 5 that hit the three-pointer at a 40% rate, which would just make layup lines galore. And it's regressed in the last few weeks. He should be shooting more threes. They were trying to get the ball to him in the post yesterday. It's like you're playing right into the other team's hands when they do have decent post defense. It's just insane. So
the other thing, Fred, is why are they posting up Robin Lopez more than Wendell Carter Jr.?
I know.
That's the thing. Robin Lopez isn't going to be here next year. He might not be here by the end of this year. So, you know, Wendell Carter's your future. Why waste reps going into the post on Robin Lopez? I mean, we can all debate post play as it is, but if you're going to do it with Wendell, not with Robin.
I agree 100%. If that yields wins, great. If we're getting wins due to Robin Lopez in the post, what's the point? You know, what good is that? I really quick, I want to go just another Chandler Hutchinson. What's your impression of him since he's entered the starting lineup? I love the kid's natural talent, but he's another guy to me that really needs a dose of major confidence and a major just like I'm here to kick ass.
Yeah, underwhelming would be my word, not just since he's been in the starting lineup, but just all season. And he's a great, you know, terrific young man. I love what he's about. He goes out there. He's not trying to do too much. He's not trying to step on anyone's toes. he's trying to find his role and play his role and play it to the best of his ability. I just don't think that he's NBA ready in terms of being a starter or even a rotation player. He has flashes. You know, when he gets the defensive rebound and pushes it up the floor, you see the potential. You know, defensively, you know, our Stephen Noe wrote a really good piece about how he's able to do a lot of different things defensively to help the team defense. And I do think that there's a lot of value in that. But he's another one who just goes MIA. There's times on the floor you don't even know if he's there. And so, you know, for a four-year college player who was allegedly or supposedly NBA ready, you know, I just don't think he is that, and he needs some time.
So a guy that I compare him to with Oklahoma City is Andre Roberson. Do you see any similarities between those two? Andre obviously joined Oklahoma City as a 22-year-old, a little bit older, just like Hutch. Is there any similarities between those two players?
Streaky shooting?
Well, Andre doesn't really bring any shooting. I know, yeah. But he's an elite defender, right? And makes a massive difference on the game on that side of the ball. Did you see when he first joined Oklahoma City, is there any similarities between his first year and obviously Hutch outside of the poor shooting?
No. Andre Roberson, when he was healthy, he was arguably the best perimeter defender in this league. I mean, I remember when he went down, I sent a text to my old coworkers in OKC saying, who covered that team, saying, you know, a lot of guys are sleeping well at night now. Jimmy Butler, James Harden, Klay Thompson, all of these guys, you know, he gave all of those guys fits because of how good he was defensively, how dominant he is defensively. It almost makes up for his lack of offense and his poor shooting. I don't see that at all with Chandler Hutchinson. I mean, I've yet to see him go out there and just lock up a guy one-on-one and be able to anchor your defense on the perimeter. You don't see that very often in the league, and especially in this day and age. And Andre Roberson is a guy who's able to bring that. And I don't really remember his first year was 2013-14. He was more of a bit player. I don't even really remember his rookie year all that well, to be frank with you, Fred. But, you know, I don't see that out of Chandler Hutchinson this year. I'm not trying to kill Chandler right here, but
yeah.
He's not an elite player. We know that. And he's not dominant in any one area of the game. Andre Roberson was dominant as a perimeter defender, individual man defender. And I'd like to see Chandler grow one aspect of his game where he's just dominant.
Agreed. You knew Kevin Durant somewhat. And you know, first of all, I'd like to ask you this. Do you think he's going to leave Golden State at the end of this year? And do the Bulls have any chance of signing him as a free agent?
My biggest regret this season is instead of talking to Kevin Durant about the possibility of coming to Chicago when he came here, I had him to myself, and I could have asked him, hey, how do you feel about Chicago? And whatever he said would have made national news, or at least been a big story here in Chicago. Instead of asking him that, you know what I asked him, Fred?
Oh, no. I don't. Do we want to know?
I asked him about Cameron Payne dancing with Russell Westbrook. So I appreciate the glowing words you had about me at the top, but I was an idiot in that moment. And
this interview?
It was when the Warriors came here and waxed the Bulls by like 30 or 40 or whatever it was.
Exactly.
Klay Thompson went off. I wanted to talk to Katie before the game about it because I was gonna write a story just reminiscing on the days when the Bulls went down to Oklahoma City in December. I was gonna write a story about, you know, just reflecting on the campaign Russell Westbrook dance, and I was gonna get, you know, just a couple of different quotes from Durant and other people reminiscing on it. And I remember Kevin said, "You sure you want to talk about campaign? You know, Klay Thompson had just hit 14 threes. The Warriors had just blown him out, and I wait for everyone to leave, and I've got a relationship with Kevin."
Right.
So So no one else is standing there, and he's like, and he knows that I was going to get him after the game, and I waited patiently for everyone to ask their questions. And then it's just me and him, and the first thing he says is, "You sure you want to talk about campaign tonight, buddy?" I'm like, "Oh, man, yeah, I could have easily said, I would like to talk to you about, you know, the possibility of coming to Chicago," but, and that was at a point where he was talking to everyone about his free agency. So I dropped the ball. I really dropped the ball.
Oh, my gosh. That is one of the greatest stories. I think this story will make national news.
Yeah. I think people have viewed me a little bit differently after hearing that. But I don't think there's any way he comes to Chicago. Someone told me that night that, you know, players go from city to city and they request tickets at all of these different cities that they go to, all of these different stops. Someone told me that night that Kevin Durant didn't request a single ticket for anyone in Chicago. So that might tell you a little bit of all you need to know about how high Chicago is on his list.
Oh, my gosh. Do you know his address? I'd like to write him a letter. If that's okay. that's disappointing. So you don't think then? Do you think he'll likely leave Golden State? Just your opinion.
From everything that I'm hearing, just from people who are out there and people who are more plugged in, I do think he's leaving. And I think that whole situation has, I don't want to say run its course, because I do still think they're going to win the championship this year, so it's not fair to say it's run its course, but I think that there comes an expiration date, and you're starting to see that team, that chemistry, as currently constructed, I don't know how sustainable it's going to be going forward. And, you know, DeMarcus Cousins coming back here soon, maybe in another week, maybe that helps them. Or maybe it does the opposite. Maybe it's just one more thing that they have to worry about, try to figure out, and kind of is what ends up being their downfall. I don't know, but it just sounds like Kevin has had enough of being out there and dealing with whatever he feels like he's dealing with, whether it's playing second fiddle to Steph Curry, whether it's the Draymond Green stuff that he's had to go through. I think he's got what he was looking for with the championships. He's got finals MVPs now. And now he's I think he's put it out there. He's out to make as much money as he possibly can. And I think he wants to be in a situation where he feels like he's happy. And
Which would limit it to 11 teams that have cap space.
Yeah.
And likely your bet is on, please don't say the Knicks, the Clippers. Which one of those teams?
It's way too early to say. I don't know. I mean, everyone thinks the Knicks, but I think he's going to want to team up with someone. I don't think he's just going to want to go somewhere and just be in a situation where he's by himself. I don't know. The Knicks have Porzingis and a couple of nice young pieces, but Kevin Knox. I love Kevin Knox. I actually wanted the Bulls to draft Kevin Knox at one point. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they got Wendell Carter. I think he could be the better player, but I still am very, very high on Kevin Knox. But I don't know. I mean, I just don't see Chicago as a viable option, but I do think he's leaving.
Do you feel the overwhelming negativity in the fan base will hurt Chicago in attracting free agents? And are the players aware of this? You mentioned campaign. Campaign, people forget, was drafted by a very good organization in Oklahoma City. They used a lottery pick on him. And I thought he was a talented player who, you brought up a point, which I agree with. He didn't make my all-irritation team because I never felt like he was healthy. And, you know, it didn't work out. But I wasn't never really irritated by campaign. I understand, you know, a beloved player was sent to Oklahoma City and Taj Gibson, and that probably had something to do with it. But do you feel that? I mean, you feel the negativity, I'm sure. And do you feel the players are aware of this?
Players talk throughout the league. You know, in the summertime, they work out. A lot of them work out together. I mean, last couple of summers, they've been a workouts and pickup games out in L.A., on the campus of UCLA, where almost entire teams have participated, you know. So players talk. And this season and last season particularly, I think, has really shined a light on the Bulls in the worst ways that I think is starting to spread throughout the league and just really put the Bulls in a bad light. So, you had the Portis Mirotić incident last year, firing Fred this year, Jim Boylan's antics this year. You know, just so many different things that I think are starting to really spread, and we'll have players talking. But, you know, it's funny, Fred, because when I got here, I had no idea. You know, one, I was covering a Western Conference team for 8 years before coming here, and, you know, then spent the next two in an editing role. So I was focused on a Western Conference team. I didn't know the level of dysfunction that surrounds the Chicago Bulls, and just, you know, if you don't like the word dysfunction, whatever words you want to use, just the ridiculousness on almost a daily basis. And I do think that is starting to become more. I've certainly learned a lot in my, I don't know how long I've been here now, 15, 16 months now. But I think that's also starting to spread throughout the league that, you know, there's something in Chicago that's just not quite right. And I think everyone who listens to this and everyone who's followed this team has an idea and probably agrees on what that might be. But I think players talk, especially in the summer. And with this Jabari Parker situation, that's just, it's just a rare situation that I don't think people expect it to happen. You know, even though we all knew that it wasn't the greatest fit to bench a guy a third of the way into the season and to just not play him, and you're throwing out lineups of Ryan Arcidiacono and Chandler Antonio Blakeney and Shaquille Harrison over Jabari Parker. That just, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I know those guys are all, you know, kind of, you know, gritty guys. They defend, except for Antonio Blakeney. But I don't see why you're playing those guys over Jabari Parker, love him or hate him. And I think that's the type of stuff that players will talk about and say, yeah, that's a bad situation. I wouldn't go there.
Yeah, no doubt on that. I mean, this whole Jabari Parker situation, what do you think the impetus is behind this? Because there's no doubt he was playing well before Fred was fired. He was averaging like a 20 points per game and 9 rebounds for about 3 weeks or 2 weeks, playing at, I thought, a pretty high level, improved defense. And then all of a sudden, I just assumed it was the Bulls are looking to trade him. And I understand that. He's got a history of injury, and you don't want him to get hurt. And then I'm at the Indiana game, and they put him in for like 16 minutes. I'm like, what? And you're watching the second unit just absolutely awful offensively. It's just an embarrassment. It's a big reason. I think the Bulls at from 6 to 10, you know, have guys that should be 11 to 15. And Parker's better than any of those guys. Do you feel like, what is going on here? Is it more of legitimately Jim Boylan doesn't like his defensive effort? Or is it the Bulls are trying to trade him?
You know, one of the things that I've heard was that, and you know, I don't know how true this is, but one of the things that I've heard is that the assistant coaches were the ones who were behind this. And they went to Boylan and said, hey, let's sit Jabari. And it kind of makes a little sense to me because Boylan was Jabari's guy. Mm-hmm. Boylan was Jabari's assigned coach who worked out with him before the games and, you know, in practices. He was a shooting coach. He would rebound for him and give him tips and pointers. And, you know, all these guys have certain assigned coaches on the staff that they work with. And Boylan was Jabari's guy. Jabari raved about Boylan. You know, I thought that, you know, I've even written this, that Boylan was the Jabari Parker whisperer. Anytime there was a timeout, you'd see not Fred Hoiberg go over to Jabari Parker, but Jim Boylan. And Jabari would, you know, he almost kind of tuned out Fred, but he would respond to Jim Boylan. And then for Jim Boylan to then bench him, not, you know, what was it, 2-3 games into his head coaching tenure,
yeah,
that
ridiculous.
He benches Jabari Parker, that just didn't make much sense at all, given the nature of the relationship that they had and enjoyed by all accounts. So there is one theory that it was the assistants who went to him and said that. I can't put my finger on it with certainty, but it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And the one thing that really doesn't make sense is that if you're benching him because of his defensive effort, yes, the defense got a little bit better, you know, without him in the lineup, but there was also some other factors involved, you know, not playing, you know, great teams, catching teams on back-to-backs, catching teams when they were missing, you know, some of their star players, things like that. So the defense has slipped, and they, you know, they're giving up the same amount of points now that they've always given up. And you know, it's not much better without Jabari Parker at this point than it was with him, or than it would be with him. So I get Jim Boylan's, I get his approach. I get his philosophy of what he's trying to do, his method in terms of tearing it down and trying to build it back up and trying to take baby steps. But there's no way, I don't feel there's any way that they can realistically say that Jabari Parker can't help them. He can help them in some way on the floor. And for them to not be able to find that, to me, if that's the reason, that falls on the coaches, that falls on the front office. And yes, you have to put some fault on Jabari Parker, but at the same time, they should be able to find a way for him to be able to contribute in some capacity, as opposed to just benching him. That's why I feel it's got to be something more there. I think they just want to cut bait and like you said, not let him get hurt or put himself in a position where he could get hurt and damage them being able to potentially get something back in return. So I think there's a lot of layers to it. Depending on whom you believe, there's some conspiracies out there, but this whole thing just doesn't make much sense to me.
Absolutely true, especially with Portis getting hurt. I mean, then you need a backup four. It's like when he was hurt, it's like this is not rocket science. You got a backup four. He's Jabari Parker, and he doesn't even play. It's mind-boggling. So I hope that there's a trade that's coming up, because that's the only thing that would make sense to me. Otherwise, I'm really going to be concerned about the future of this team, more so than I am already. Two more, and Darnell, I can't thank you enough for the time you've given. This is just so great, and I know the listeners are going to love to hear this. But looking back on the era of Fred Hoiberg, what would you rate as his one or two biggest mistakes? And do you feel Coach Boylan is respected by this team?
Oh, man. So I got Fred in his last year and a half. So I missed his first 2 years. So I wasn't there for all of the Jimmy stuff. I wasn't there for all of the Rondo and the Joakim stuff. Sounded like he made some pretty big mistakes there. Joakim, especially with the Joakim situation, saying, you know, that he telling the media Joakim made the decision to come off the bench, and then the media going to Joakim, and that I just couldn't imagine being in that situation. You know, being a reporter with a tape recorder in front of those guys. You know, actually, I experienced that one time with Byron Scott and J.R. Smith way back when I did the Hornets when they were in Oklahoma City. It was a similar instance when Byron didn't make up something, and then we went to the J.R. Smith, and then, you know, J.R. Smith said the complete opposite. So that to me was a pretty big blunder. But I wasn't here for it. I don't, you know, since I've been here, and to be fair to Fred, I can only speak to what I witnessed when I was here. I got here at the start of last season. My second day on the job was Bobby Portis punching Nico Mirotic. I don't think that Fred made a ton of, like, huge mistakes. I mean, we can debate all day long. You know, that game he left Jabari Parker in there. I think it was the Pistons game.
Bobby and Portis and Parker as his 4 and 5, which
insanity. Yeah, like, we can debate lineup choices, rotations, things like that. But to me, those aren't, like, egregious things, especially for a rebuilding team that was in the first year of the rebuild. Oh, that was this season. So last season, they were so injured. They started 3-20. You know, Mirotic is out. Portis is suspended. Dunn's out the first couple games.
Nwaba. They had a ton of injuries.
All of these different just hardships. I think it would be unfair to Fred to say he made these huge, egregious mistakes at any point last year or any point, you know, this year. I mean, the guy didn't even make it to Christmas. So I don't have any major complaints from Fred since I've been here. I mean, there were always little things that you could point to, but nothing like over the top, in my opinion. As for Jim Boylan, I do think he has, for the most part, respect from the team. And the way I judge that, you know, I think that they've tried to buy in and give him a chance. I don't think they think it's going to work. But the way I judge it is when you see him in the huddle, he has command of the huddle. Guys are looking at him. Guys aren't blowing him off. Guys aren't walking out of the huddle, which you can see in the NBA sometimes.
Yes.
He's got full command of the huddle. He's making eye contact with guys. He stays on them. He coaches them up, and he coaches them hard. And As much as they might not like some of his methods or his tactics, that to me shows that he still has their ears. And we also got to remember, it's probably the youngest team now in the league, right? It was, I think, the second youngest coming into the league. Now that they traded Holiday, it might be the youngest team in the league. So it's not like these guys are, you know, 30, 31, 32, 33-year-old guys where, you know, they've been around, they've seen it, they've done it, and they have the ability to push back. That's not what this team is. So, you know, I think that might be a little bit overblown, whether or not he has the respect, and because they're so young and he's got so many inexperienced guys that they don't have much of a choice but to follow his lead.
Do you feel that what happened, obviously, with the national news of the players not, you know, showing up for practice, et cetera, do you think that had damaged his reputation league-wide to the point that nobody would come to play here or make it more unlikely for people to come and play here? That was the major question I wanted to have, is there was a lot being made of wind sprints and conditioning, in-season conditioning. Does that go on in other places? In-season conditioning. what was so unusual about that week that Jim Boylan that wasn't in other towns?
You know, I've covered three teams, you know, I go to practices, but you know, I'd be speaking out of turn if I really spoke to how other teams handle their business on a day-to-day basis. But what I do know is that on Monday, you know, after Sunday's game, I forgot who they played Sunday, but After Sunday's game, they had a practice on Monday. It was a lengthy practice, and we're in the media room, and we're just hearing shouting. And I'm like, what is happening? And, you know, it turns out they were running wind sprints. You know, they got two – in the Advocate Center, I'm sure people, you know, diehard Bulls fans know this, but the Advocate Center has two courts, adjacent courts. And so when they run their sprints – generally, they run them horizontally and, you know, across the both courts. So they're running wind sprints horizontally across both of those, you know, adjacent courts. And Boylan is just laying into them loudly, so much we could hear in the press room. And we're all looking at each other. What is happening? I go in there and I ask Zach LaVine. I said, sounds like a pretty lively practice today. Sounds like a lot of shouting. Who was that? Zach says, come on, man, you know who that was. I said, you're right, I do. And it was obviously, everyone knew it was Jim Boylan. And so that, to me, is the uncharacteristic part, is that, you know, we're in January, and he's running these guys like it's October or September. And that, to me, is just uncharacteristic. Do players, I think, to your question about whether or not it's going to keep players from coming, I do think Zach and Jabari and Wendell and Chris Dunn are going to be talking to their other guys, their friends around the league, and saying what they're going through. You know, maybe some guys like it, maybe some guys hate it, but I do think that those guys are going to be, you know, in their friends' ears and telling them all about what the Jim Boylan experience is like. I don't think that that's going to keep guys from coming here necessarily, because one thing that I do know, Fred, is that, you know, when it comes to free agency and getting players, it's about money and minutes. And if you've got the money and if you've got the minutes, players are going to come. As long as the Bulls have those two things to offer, I don't think Jim Boylan or John Paxson or Gar Foreman or Jerry Reinsdorf or Michael Reinsdorf is going to be much of a hindrance to guys signing up for major money and major minutes.
Well said. Well said, Darnell. I feel a little bit better with that last sentence. I got to admit, a lot of the stuff you shared today really left me a little bit less positive. I mean, because I'm
that's hard to do, Fred. That is very hard to do, as you know.
Call me crazy. I have this idea that LaVine is very well liked across the league. It seems like he's really has a kind of a really interesting status. It's kind of almost like a regal status. Guys seem to really like him. Am I misreading that, or do you think that's true?
It's hard not to like him. I say this, and I'm talking about Zach LaVine, the person, okay?
Okay.
And I only know these guys to a certain point. I think anyone in the media only knows these guys to a certain point. But my question would be, what's not to like about Zach LaVine? And I'm talking as the man, as the young man. You know, throw out whatever he is on the court, whatever you like or don't like about him on the court. I'm not talking about as a player. He's respectful. He's polite. He's cordial. You know, the guy just goes out of his way to, be just a decent human being. You know what I mean? And I think he's like that, not just with the media, but I think he's like that with everyone. That latest episode of Run With Us. I mean, you could just see the guy has a pure heart. I hate to sound like Jim Boylan. God, I wish I could take that phrase back. But he does have a pure heart.
He's got spirit, right?
He's got spirit, man. I'm juiced. I'm jacked up about it. But no, I think that translates to his relationships throughout the league as well, is what I'm saying. I don't think there's much to hate about Zach LaVine when it comes to him as a person.
Darnell, I can't thank you enough for this today. You and Steph at The Athletic, you guys really make this season so much more bearable. Just reading this stuff and your nuggets, I mean, everybody's a huge fan of that. What you do with the magic you guys create is, along with Casey Johnson, is one of my other favorites. I can't say enough, and thank you for the work that you do. And thank you for the time you've given me today. This is going to be one of the historic best Bulls podcasts of all time, due to your participation. So,
thanks for the kind words, Fred. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me. I do appreciate that as well.
Okay. And when are you headed out? When are you going out? So what part of this tour are you going to be on? What city?
I'm going to be in L.A., and then I'm going to go to Denver for those last two games. Just because, you know, if I didn't go, I wouldn't see the team for probably 10, 11 days or so. And there's some other things that I'm trying to work on, some couple pieces that I'm trying to work on, including one with Lauri Markkanen. So I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully I can get him when I'm out in either L.A. or Denver and maybe turn in a nice little piece to let people get to know Lauri Markkanen a little bit more, because he's soft-spoken. He doesn't say a whole lot. And, you know, he's kind of a man of mystery in some ways. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to try to get him to open up. That's my challenge. So that's my biggest goal going out on the road.
Oh, that's awesome. It sounds like a home run. I can't wait to read it. And definitely, yeah, talk about sustainability with him. I think he's a big environment guy, and that's a big passion of mine. So I go. That's where I'd start out, you know, bring
that's
the rake.
One of the topics. I mean, he's big on social media talking about it, so I definitely want to pick his brain about it.
Sounds good, Darnell. Thank you, man. Have a good one, and safe travels out there. Can't wait to read your work at The Athletic.
All right, thanks, Fred.